when things are hard, like really hard, is it okay to argue with God? Does God want us to accept, or is it okay to fight with him? Welcome back. I'm Gilad Ross, author of Living Beautifully, How to Bring Meaning, Joy, and Love into Your Life Based on the Timeless Wisdom, and host of the Power Up podcast, where we share real life wisdom to upgrade your everyday life.
Is it okay to argue with God? And we're going to look at that tonight. And I also want to go a little bit deeper tonight and kind of figure out, like, what does God want us to do? Does he want us to be argumentative with him? Does he want us to accept what happens to him? What are the parameters for it? What sort of relationship does God want from us?
The way the world is set up, it seems like we as humans, we want to ask questions, we have emotions, we have, you know, things that God has given us. But just like with your fellow humans, hopefully if you're going to interact and you have an issue with someone, you're not like just yelling all the time. Like, you, hopefully there's some respect. So,
right.
So I would say that that's
I like what you're saying, and I particularly like the way you're like making a parallel between human to human relationships and human to God relationships. Well, we'll explore and see.
There's a higher wisdom, and I trust that. Line from a store that said, "I trust the next chapter because I know the author."
I love that. Anyone thinks that God wants us to just accept what it is?
Well, I said 2 weeks ago that I think it's important for us to look for the good in every situation, but
I believe that there could be terrible things that happen to us. It's for our highest learning that we can't see. And when we get mad at God, that there's things that we can't see. And that it's when I look back, that's the only reason why I can see this. It was for my highest good.
Another hard thing is that when you have your kids look at you and say, "Mommy, I love God so much, and we love God so much, then why is what's happening in Israel? Why?" And that's a question that happens all the time. Or, you know, why did this happen? Why did that happen? You know, and so unfortunately, it has brought not some my daughter, but mostly my son, his anger in God. It's so high. I don't know how to answer him. I try, but it doesn't work.
You're raising a fantastic question. And I would almost say this is a part two, but we're going to look at firstly, is it okay to question and argue with God, right? Then we can kind of look at, if it is okay, what do we do with those sorts of questions? Look at the sources, right? Because basically, when we have these sorts of questions, right, these sort of big picture questions, big idea questions of what is our relationship with God supposed to look like, what we do is we look into the Torah and we look at the stories that the Torah tells us, right? Because if you think about it, the Torah was written over a span of, I don't know how many years, 2,500, 3,000 years, right? I mean, from beginning of creation, the Torah was given at the year 2448, and then it's a little bit longer than that. So maybe it's 2,500 years, right? A lot of stuff happens in 2,500 years, right? Not all of that stuff made it into the Torah. The only stuff that made it into the Torah, the only stories that made it into the Torah are stories that contain lessons for us for all times. So when we look at the stories, then it gives us so much insight and understanding into these topics. So if you look through the Torah, I think you'll discover what Marla kind of pinpointed, right? Is that, and I want to broaden what Marla brought up a little bit more as well, because if you look around the world and I'll share with you a story, right? Like my own personal things, right? There are times, especially since October 7th, where, you know, I'll pick up one of my kids. You know, I've got a 3-year-old, 5-year-old. It's sort of cute little people, right? And you know, and sorry?
That's little people. I wish I still had
them. Yes, exactly. Like small, snuggly, cute little people, right? And, I you know, I'll give them a hug or something. And I just think to myself, like, this is what's so beautiful, right? Like to be able to have a child, to be able to hold that child close, that innocence, like it's just to have that love in your life is just a beautiful, beautiful thing. And then at the same time, I'll be like, and there are children his age in Gaza. Like, it's how do you wrap your head around like these? And we have it even within our own lives. I think sometimes you have like these moments of beauty and these moments of hardship, right? And if you look through the Torah, you'll see that seesaw, right? In it, the world is created, Adam and Eve are in the Garden of Eden, right? It doesn't get much more perfect than that. And then what happens? The snake, the sin, right? Fast forward a few generations, right? You have Abraham, right? Now, Abraham was this paradigm of kindness, right? All he wanted to do was to give to people, right? To connect to God, to give to people. He was this kind, loving person, opened up his home, which was a tent, to invite people in and to feed them and just to help, right? At the same time, you have the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah, right? Do you know anything about those cities? Anyone knows anything about them? What were they known for?
Sin. Immorality.
Hint, it wasn't kindness. Right? They not just immorality, but they like we're told that they had a law that you weren't allowed to host guests. Now it's one thing to say I'm not going to be hospitable, right? It's quite another to make that a law, right? If that's a law, like this is what we hold to be the ideal, right? The ideal is you don't share, you don't give to others, right? Like it's just another level of it. We all mess up and we all have times where we're selfish, etc. But when we make that like the norm and you know the moral standing, that's when things get completely corrupt, right? So you have all these two things at the same time, always, right? And we're not going to go into it tonight, but I think sometimes we can recognize that we need both, right? Sometimes it's you know, it's the heartbreak that helps us recognize the beauty and the beauty that leads to the heartbreak, right? Can't have grief without love, right? You know, you don't miss something that you've never loved. For anyone that's read Brené Brown's work, right, on vulnerability, she talks about this a lot, right? That you can't numb specific emotions, right? You can't decide to switch off the uncomfortable emotions because you switch off the comfortable, the love and the happiness and the joy and the gratitude, and all those emotions come with vulnerability, right? So again, that's a different kind of it's something to bear in mind that we see this right from the beginning of the world, this kind of the seesaw, right? The beauty, the hardship. And we can recognize on some level that we kind of need both, and why is again a topic for another discussion. But what happens when we're in those moments of hardship, right? What should our response be? So let's start with a little case study, okay? We talk about Abraham, right? Tell me a little bit what you know about Abraham.
Fine.
He was very kind. Exactly. Anything else?
He
hosted.
Lucky.
Yes. Sorry, I'm then creating.
Well, he shared God by inviting people, and that was his way of spreading emunah about God.
He brought God awareness into the world. Yes. Yes, exactly. God told him to leave his home, and what did he do? He left. Where was he going?
He didn't know,
right? Like, imagine that, you know, like, I was leaving to Denver. I knew where I was going, right? I knew we were going to a great organization, great city, beautiful city, great house, and I still protested, right? Hashem said to Abraham, get up and go, and he's like, okay, right? So this is a person of incredible faith, incredible kindness, right? And then he has a situation which upsets him because he sees something which he sees as unjust, right? Because God tells him he's going to destroy the city of Sodom, right? Now, why does Abraham find that unjust? Anyone knows?
Well, because just by it, if there's even one innocent person, not any of them.
Right. So Abraham recognized that, you know, that maybe there are good Hey, the city as a whole is a terrible, corrupt place. But maybe there are good people. How can you, God, kill good people together with others? So what do you think Abraham's reaction? If you know the story, I'm going to ask you to pretend this is kind of the first time you're hearing about the story, right? You know a little bit about Abraham. This is what you're allowed to know for now, okay? You're allowed to know that Abraham was a very kind, humble person who had a lot of faith in God. You're also allowed to know that he knew that God was going to destroy the city of Sodom for its immorality and cruelty. And he felt like it was unjust because maybe there were going to be good people, not just innocent people, but maybe good people that were going to get killed together. What do you think he would have done or said at that point to God? Or what would you do or say at that point to God? Yes.
I say get the good people out and then go.
Okay, so you tell God to get the good people out. Okay, fair enough.
He had so much faith that he probably had faith in the bad people too. Does that make sense? Like, he probably didn't want to destroy. He probably wanted to see if there was any way to give them a second chance.
Okay, why don't you give them a second chance? Okay, anything else? Okay, I would like someone with a loud voice to read the first paragraph in italics, please.
Do you have another one? Oh.
Yes, this person won't mind it. Oh, this, oh, sorry. I thought it was
an
Yeah,
sorry, it's in any
I've got an extra one for you at the end, okay? It's just, yeah. Who's reading it, please? Okay, thank you.
Will you sweep the innocent along with the guilty? What if there should be 50 innocent within the city? Will you then wipe out the place and not forgive it for the sake of the innocent 50 who are in it?
What do you think of what Abraham said? What are your thoughts on what his
The merit of the 50 should save the whole
Yeah,
city.
he's arguing with God's decision, right? He's saying, you're going to kill the innocent together with the guilty. If there's 50 innocent people, will you not forgive it for the sake of those 50 people? Marty, you're going to say something.
Well, some people translate it as righteous versus innocent. And if so, his faith is that the righteous people will influence the rest of the city to repent. So if there's enough of them, then they can make a positive impact and to change the city.
Right. So you're, I would have to check it up. It's very possible. I think it is righteous. I don't. I think the innocence isn't. Things get lost in translation. So I think you're right about that, and I think you're raising a good point. You understand it. I understand it. Abraham understands it. You don't think God understands that? You don't think God would have thought about it? Like, what do you think about Abraham talking to God like that? I want to pick on you, if I may, Karina, because you mentioned that we're allowed to argue with God as long as we're respectful.
And what I didn't say that, it just, well, not
Yes.
those
Okay,
exact,
sorry.
but you're asking me, like,
What do you
just.
think of it? You think that's respectful? You think that, I mean, he's not. Sorry.
Well, I guess from God's perspective, maybe it's a test also. No,
A test for
I.
Abraham.
Right, like I'm going to test him and see what he's going to do if I'm, the situation in front of him. How's he going to react?
Okay. And does it, what do you guys think? Do you think that Abraham's being respectful? Are you surprised at the argument? I mean, how would you have phrased it? Let's take God out of the picture, right? Let's say you're working somewhere, right? And your boss, who is very, very good at what they do and well thought out and has come up with a decision that you think is weird or wrong or unjust or unhelpful. How would you say it to them? How would you question them on
I know how my husband would do it.
it?
With all due respect.
And something like, do you come up with an alternative? Is there any other solution, or we
One minute, is your husband British, with all due respect?
No, I'm not sure. Say something hard. He says, same with all
with all due
respect. That's fine.
Soften the blow. With all due respect, is there another way of doing this, right? I don't know if a lot of us would go straight in there and say, you're seriously gonna do that? Right? You're gonna wipe out the righteous together with, I mean, that's, I wouldn't want to be accused of letting the righteous people suffer together with the wicked. Like, that's a pretty harsh, I think. You hear me, Max? It seems like a pretty strong way of talking about it. We'll see in a moment how God reacts. But I want to ask you another question. Do you think this is an isolated incident in the Torah?
No.
No. So someone else is going to read. We have different stories within the Torah, and I just selected a few, right? Moses. God asked Moses to step up and be the leader of the people in Egypt. What does Moses say? No, I can't talk. Okay, that part we understand. How often does God give us an opportunity? And even though we can't see it, but like it's like, I can't talk, it's too hard. I'm not fit for it, right? That part we can understand. But then what happens? He finally, God gets angry with him and says, look, you know, I'm asking you to do this. You could do this, right? And Moshe says yes. And then he goes to Pharaoh. And what happens next?
But he only says yes. Doesn't he also bring Aaron into the picture? Like he says, okay, I understand you. He's upset with him. He's that many. I'm going to give you someone to help. So when they go tomorrow, Aaron's the one that speaks. He's right. Isn't he the one? Or is that okay?
Yes. And Aaron, yes, you're right.
But he couldn't talk because he had a problem with his mouth.
Well, that was his insecurity.
Right.
Was
up
here? No.
He could talk, but he had a speech defect, right? And God knew that he had a speech defect. And I think, I believe one of the reasons why he specifically had the speech defect is because God wanted to show a message that it's not because Moses was the most incredible orator of all time that he became the leader of the Jewish people. That's not why it happened. Even though he had a speech defect, he was still able to lead the Jewish people and bring down the Torah and speak to Pharaoh, right? That was his insecurity, right? And his humility, etc., right? And God, they have this this dialogue, right, between him and God. And finally, Moses says yes. But what happens once he goes to Pharaoh and he tells him that the Jewish people go? Marla, what happens?
They make it worse and they have to get their own straw. So he just increased the hardship on the people as soon as he came.
Right. And again, what would we say if that would have happened to us, right? And you know what? I'm going to give you an example that I hear from other people a lot, right? I had a very good friend who her and her family decided to become more Shabbat observant. And they did that. And over time, a lot of like difficulties hit their family. They it was just before COVID, and they got COVID, and her husband was really, really sick with COVID. He was in hospitals, he was really sick, and then he had work difficulties. And she would often say to me, she's like, sometimes it feels like since we decided to keep Shabbat, like God is making it so hard for me, right? And, you know, I see some heads nodding. I think we can sometimes relate to it. It's like, you know, God, I'm doing this for you. Why are you making it so hard for me, right? What does Moses say? What would we say at that point? What do we think? Not for what would we say. What do we think we should say at that point?
I have trouble with authority, so I would just do it. I have a stutter. I can't do it. I would just bite my lip and just make it bigger speech by my lip, but I would just like do it. I don't know. I just want to add something here that it could be gender also. I think if you ask a woman, she would go along more likely. I am totally generalizing. It depends on the person. But I think a man would be more questioning and speak up like that.
So I hear your point. And I also think that when we bring this story into our lives, we are all, again, I'm going to talk about myself because I don't know this, but I'm pretty sure that once I share with you what my experience has been, is that you'll be able to resonate, because I'm pretty sure that everyone kind of has had. I think I have definitely had opportunities in my life that definitely God has put in front of me, where I have not jumped at, right? Where I have said no to, right? And many times what holds us back and what we say, why we say no, is our own insecurities, right? So for Moses, it was his speech defect. Years ago, when I was living in Calgary with three little kids, I was asked to give a parenting course. And I think I may have shared this before, so apologies if I have. Mm-hmm. And I put out a flyer and I was going to do it. And then, you know, got closer to it. And I was like, I can't do that, right? Like, who am I to give parenting classes, right? And again, it was my own insecurities, right? Because we're all imperfect people and parents and whatnot, right? And that was my own. And what's interesting is that at the same time, I was asked to give classes. And it was my first time giving talks in public before, and I was so, so nervous because I didn't think of myself as a public speaker at all. And someone asked me, and there was no one else in the city to do it, so I was like, okay, fine. I remember like sitting in the car before and like almost throwing up with nerves about it. And right, and I often contrast those two situations, because I said yes to the public speaking, and thank God, like I've taught since then many times, and I said no to giving those parenting classes. And about 10 years later or so, I was again given that opportunity to give parenting classes. And the next time I said yes, right? And I was very honored and privileged to be able to help other parents in their family life, right? And I contrast those, because even though, thank God, I got a second opportunity, right? We don't always get second opportunities. But I also sometimes wonder, like, what would have happened had I said yes the first time, right? And we all have a journey, and we've got to learn from what happened and move forward. But my point really is that we don't live in a generation where God turns around to us and says, I want you to do this, okay? I want you to reach out to this lonely person and offer to take them chicken soup, even though you know that when you go over to give them chicken soup, she's going to talk and talk and talk and talk and talk, talk your ear off, right? Whatever it is, right? Or God doesn't say that to us, right? But we get this like little pang of an idea. Maybe someone will post in a chat and says, this person's really lonely. Or maybe someone else, or maybe you'll drive past the house and you'll think to yourself, I bet she's really lonely. Maybe I should drop something off, right? Those ideas, those thoughts, and it happens in other areas as well, right? Like maybe, you know, you're at someone else's house for Shabbat and they do something that's beautiful and you're like, oh, I want to incorporate that into my life, right? Maybe the way they light candles, or maybe the way they just have a moment of connection over the blessings or whatnot, right? Those thoughts of, I should do that, are really God communicating to us, right? And very often we kind of say no to those thoughts. Sometimes it's other people that's offering us that opportunity. We say no to those thoughts. And very often we say no to those opportunities because we feel like, who am I to go and lead the Jewish people? I have a speech impediment, right? Who am I to do this? And I can't do that. It's way too hard for me. Or who am I to take this on? Because I know that I'll take it on and I'll do it once or twice or three times and then I'll drop it, right? It's exact same situation that Moses is. And this is the point I think that we can see when we look at the stories, right? When we look at the stories that the Torah says and we kind of pull apart what's actually going on, we recognize that, wow, God also gives us opportunities, right? And sometimes we also fight those opportunities. Sometimes we jump into it, right? And it's great. And we look back at it and we're like, I can't believe I said yes. I had no idea what I was thinking, but I'm so glad I did, right? And look what's come from it. Yes.
You know, what I've told you before.
Yeah.
When you think you've got the message and you think you're supposed to be doing something and you try to do it and you try to do it like 4 or 5 times and you keep failing, then, or it doesn't seem to be that's working. Or like, when do you give up? Or when do you say, I'm not sure, you know,
Okay, so you're asking a fantastic question, and the gosh, I've got so much to say. so much to say on it. I don't even. Where's my notes? Where's my notes? In 2 months' time, right? When do we give up?
Country, there's Kentucky Fried Chicken. Colonel Sanders was the supposedly he like tried to start this business a million times, knock on people's door, and like there's examples of people that just don't give up. So I guess it depends on the situation. Like it,
absolutely depends on the situation. We don't even know how to define success or failure, right? You know what I'll do. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to leave you a question to think about. Okay, and then we'll look at it at a different session. And the question I want you to think about is, it's a very good question, right? When do I give up, right? I tried, and I failed. How do you define failure? What is failure? How do you define success? Think about it. Keep that question to mind. Think about it. Let me know what your thoughts are, and we'll please God recircle and come back to it another week, right? Okay, where were we up to? Okay. So, oh yes, I am eating you, Hanny. and I want to hear your thoughts. So message me and let me know. But yes, all right. So what does Moses say when he's in that situation where he's trying so hard and things got worse for the Jewish people? He turns around to God and he says, "Lord, why have you brought trouble on this people? Why did you send me? Since I came to Pharaoh to speak to your name, he has brought trouble on his people, and you have not rescued your people at all," right? That's quite in your face. I mean, I would imagine that the Torah example would be, he would say, "God, please explain what's going on. It seems that things are harder." And that's what he's saying. He's straight out. He says, "Why have you brought trouble on this people? Why did you send me? Since I came to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he has brought trouble on his people and did not rescue your people at all." He's almost like telling God, "We had a deal and you didn't keep your part of the deal." Like, that is, in my opinion, confrontational and very direct, right? So what's going on here, right? And we have a few other examples from the prophets as well, which you can take a look at. But what I want to do is to try and figure it out, is to go back to Abraham, right? Now, who was Abraham? Right, we said who he was, right? He was a person who was gentle, kind, humble. Whatever God told him to do, he did. God tells him, "Get up and leave everything you know." He does that. God tells him to, to eventually sacrifice his son. The son that he waited years for and was promised that this week is where your descendants will come from. He's prepared to do that. And yet, something comes up that he sees as unjust. And you know what he says to God further on? He says, "Far be it from you to do such a thing, to bring death upon the innocent as well as the guilty, so that innocent and guilty fare alike. Far be it from you. Shall not the judge of all the earth deal justly?" Again, we thought the one earlier was a little bit confrontational. He's telling God, "It's such a thing, right? You're a just God, right?" Like, again, I would not have thought that was okay, right, to say that. Like, he's telling God, "How can you do that? How can you kill innocent people together with wicked people, right? You're a fair judge. How on earth can you do it?" How does God respond? Because I think God's response will give us a clue as to whether Abraham was right or wrong.
Well, God listened to him.
Yes, yeah, exactly. God tells him, you know what God tells him? He says to him, "You're right. If there were 10 people, in 10 righteous people, I would save the city." What does that mean? That God tells him. Hold on a second. So what do we learn from this story? Right? What do we learn about ourselves and about our relationship with God? Let's start with the first one about our relationship with God first. What do we learn about our relationship with God?
It's okay to speak your feelings. It seems to me the common denominator in all of these that it has to do with treating people nicely. So
yes, and
when it's for the sake of someone else's good.
Although you're right, and Job, who was Eov, argued with God, and it was his own situation, and the book was named after him, right? Yeah. So you're saying it's okay to argue with God. What were you going to say?
I said that he desires
exactly.
She said
he desires us relationship with.
But I was going to say, like he's saying, is that it's not just that it's okay, it's that God wants it, right? That if someone argues with me, right, and I turn around to him and say, you're right, that shows that I'm more than just okay with it, right? God, Moses argued with God, and Hashem, God said to him, you're right.
But wait a minute.
Yes.
But I thought that God is supposed to no more than people, so why would God make that mistake and have to be corrected by a human?
Okay, it's a very good question, and I want to come back to it. Okay, so but before the, so the first thing we learn about the story is, remind me at the end, please, and we'll come back to it. The first thing we learn about the story is that not only is it okay to argue with God, but God actually wants us to argue with him, right? He actually wants that dialogue. He wants that relationship with him. And I think it's important to note one thing about this, right? Talk about Abraham. We talk about Moses. These are people that lived a life of faith, right? We can't just be people who do what we want, and then when things don't go our way, get angry with God, right? That's not what we're talking about right here, right? We're talking about people that had tremendous faith. They lived their life with faith, and yet when they saw something that wasn't just, they argued with God, they spoke out, and God liked it. God was happy about it. Yes.
So I learned that when God made us, he knew everything that we were going to do.
Right.
So he knew that I, and Moshe, we're going to argue with him. So I'm trying to figure it all out in my head. He already knew that was going to happen. Why make them go through that fear and then have to work it up to argue with him?
Right. So I think it's a very similar question to your question, right?
But I can say that.
Sorry, my question.
Okay. So I think it was a similar question. What God knows better, oh, why is he doing right. things that thing? So what we're not going to have time to go into what we can learn about ourselves. Again, that will be for class numbers 9 or whatever going forward, right? Because that's also a fascinating one. But I want to throw the question back at the group, okay? So you're asking a very good question. God knew this information, right? God knew what benefits can there be about speaking out? Yes.
It shows that you care.
Shows that you care. You invested.
And then you learn more about yourself.
You learn more about yourself. And there's not just one answer. I just want to hear all ideas. What else?
Well, you know how the whatever is the strength to actually it was like, well, I didn't know I could do that.
Okay.
Or seeing some sign of whatever you're saying to God is it's not so nice, or you are actually screwing with God, and then later like, oh, but I didn't know that was
right.
And they have that special like relationship where they can do that.
it builds relationship when you can have those uncomfortable dialogues, right? God doesn't just want us to be subservient and compliant and yes, 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 people. Otherwise, he wouldn't have made us so resistant to authority. He wants that dialogue, right? Any other positives come from speaking out against injustice? You maintain the relationship. And if we bring it into our lives, what else? Or let's do the flip side.
Well, yeah. Well, I had a situation recently with a friend. She was mad at me and she told me. And it was like, that was good. Because if she hadn't told me, they might have created distance.
Absolutely. And And the act of having that conversation and working it through doesn't just, it sometimes creates connection, right? Because you have that. It
creates trust, because in the long run, you know that they're going to be honest with you. So it frees you up to be honest with them.
Right, right. So it deepens our relationship. It makes it real. It deepens the trust.
But it could also make matters worse. Because one time I got pulled into the office and they said, you know, Amy, you say God bless you to everybody. And I was like, yeah. And
what?
You say God bless you to everybody. And I said, okay, yeah. And I knew what was coming. And she said, you can't say that. It's like, I'm sorry, I'm not going to do that. And she said, well, what happens to somebody that doesn't believe in God? And I said, then they can tell me. Or they're going to get a blessing. That's what I said. Right. And I literally walked out of her office. I said, if you're going to write me up, please write me up. But I'm not going to listen. I won't listen to that. And I walked out. It made my life that much harder. But I never, ever, to this day, I've never gotten anybody to yell at me or get mad. You know when people don't believe in God, because I'll say, God bless you, right before I get off the phone. And some people are just real quiet about it and don't say anything. Or other people say, have a good day. But nobody's ever said, you know what? I wish you wouldn't have said that to me. Right, exactly. But
how dare you bless me?
Well, my boss hated me. Because I literally said,
can I just say a distinction? You're raising a very good point. And the distinction between you and your boss having that conversation and us and God having dialogue, is there's no relationship there. The relationship there wasn't there, right? With God, God has wide shoulders, right? God has, you know, all the skills that we need to be able to hear, right? To be able to hear from Abraham, the person, one of the people that he created, and to admit to him that he's wrong. Like, God can handle what we have to say. Exactly. On the flip side, what's wrong with not keeping quiet, besides with just the relationship things?
What's wrong with not keeping quiet?
With keeping quiet, with not speaking out against what we see as injustice. You let that build up, and also, what happens in the world? Terrible things happen, right? If you look at some of the things that go on in the world, right? All that's needed for evil to happen is for good people to remain silent, right? Mm-hmm. And, right, God created us in a way that he wants us to have that relationship with him, that dialogue with him. He wants us to be able to see things that aren't just and think about it and speak up. It is such a hard thing to speak up, right? Imagine you have a very, very good friend, right? And they're about, and they've had one drink too many, and they're about to get in the car and drive home. How easy is it at that point to turn around to them and say, I don't think you should do this? It's not easy, right? It's very hard to be able to stand up. There are so many stories of, you know, God forbid, like children, right, who are abused and pass away, right? There was a terrible situation where a child was abused by his mother, and he died, she killed him. Mm-hmm. The judge couldn't figure out what the cause of death was because he had been so brutally abused, right? Mm-hmm. Now, do you think this was a child that had never been in A&E, that had the social work department didn't know about, the teachers never saw? This doesn't happen in a vacuum. All that's needed for those things to happen is for people to keep quiet. And I want to ask you a question. Those people that keep quiet, the teachers who taught him, and the neighbors that live next to him, and the doctors in the A&E, what type of people are they? Are they horrible, cruel people? No, they're probably people who pay their taxes and want to do good and are good citizens, scared to speak up. Right? And God wants us to be able to stand up to injustice. And you know how we become people who are able to stand up to injustice? Because at the end of the day, it's hard and brave people, right? You know, if I think about the Harvey Weinstein story, right? How did they bring him down? It took some very, very brave people who were able to speak up. How do you become that brave person? You do it by small little things, right? By small little things. You see something and it doesn't quite sit right. And yes, obviously, as Karina says, we do it in a way that's respectful and in a way we have to recognize when we're talking to people, people have egos and people have their own blind spots, etc. And we have to do it in a way that they'll listen to it. But when we can flex our muscle, right, that's able to speak up, that is how we become people who eventually can speak up to evil and who eventually can have that relationship with God, like Moses and like Abraham, where they said to God, what's going on? What are you doing? Right? Not and it was, you know, and God listened and loved it. Because again, just like we see in our relationships, when we have those deep conversations, it makes the relationship real, right? When you can actually talk to someone else and you can tell them what's bothering you, that's a real relationship. When they can listen to you, that's a real relationship. And ultimately, that's what God wants in us, a real relationship. He wants our heart. He wants our rawness. He wants our emotions. He wants us to bring it all to there because that's a real relationship.
Thank you for taking the time to listen. If you enjoyed this episode, you'll love my new book, Living Beautifully, available on my website, Amazon, or any good Jewish bookstore. And please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss out. Thank you and have a wonderful day.